This is an interview with Louise Klepper, Professor Emeritus of the University of Wisconsin at Madison and former chairperson of the dance division at the University of Wisconsin. The date is November 30th, 1976. This interview is being recorded to form part of the oral history archives of the National Dance Association of the American Alliance for Health, Physical Education, and Recreation. My name is Mary Alice Brennan, and the second interviewer is Hermine Davidson.
Louise, you're the only one of the dance educators that I can remember who started as a concert dancer and then became a dance educator, doing it backward, as it were, from most of the others. What started you dancing, and what sent you to Germany to study?
Well, I started quite by accident. My sister was a very thin little girl, and the other two in the family were a little bit more robust than she was. So my father and mother thought perhaps if she took dancing lessons, this might, you know, strengthen her muscles. She was strong enough, but she was so skinny. Well, she took ballet. That was the only thing that was available in those days. And I went to watch her one time, and I was completely hooked. Well, I begged my parents to let me, you know, steady dance. And they said, all right, we'll give you 3 months. Well, those 3 months went into 2 years. And of course, this was in Tacoma, Washington. And then, after I graduated from high school, they knew by then that this is what I wanted to do and where to go to really get, you know, more training, much more training. And my mother had been reading about a Mary Wigman in Germany. And since my cousins and aunts and uncles lived in Germany, they thought, well, this would be a good experience. The program sounded good to them. So off I went to Germany, and that's how I happened to go there. And of course, I wasn't near my relatives, but that didn't matter. I could get to them very easily. I was in Berlin for a year, and then I was in Dresden for a year. And I graduated. As a matter of fact, I think I was the first American to graduate from the Wigman School. And that's what got me started. And it was a very good thing to do, because when I came to Wisconsin later, I found that the Miss Dobler was talking very much in the same language, although she had gone much, much deeper into all the subjects, that is, the time, the space, and the force aspects of movement, plus the qualities. So this was a very good background. And then when I went to New York after that to be with the Hanya Holmes School, and she, by the way, Hanya had been sent, brought over to New York by Hurok, who had also brought Mary Wigman to this country. And Mary Wigman was a very big success. And he said to Mary, he said, you must have a school here. You will be very successful. So she chose Hanya Holm out of her school to come and represent her. And about a year later, I was asked to join that school, primarily because I was the only one with a Wigman background. Not because I was that good, but simply I had the Wigman background. So I went, and I was with Hanya then for 10 years. And of course, I studied with her all the time I was teaching, and all the time I was in the group. So I learned more and more about these things we call the movement factors.
Did you study in New York and also tour?
Well, by study, I mean I was there. I was hired by the school, and as I say, the only reason I think was because I had a Wigman diploma. So by study, that was my own choice. I went to Hanya's classes all the time I could. Anytime I had a free hour and she was teaching, I would go. So I kept learning more and more and making my technique better. And then, of course, when we'd tour and wouldn't take classes but give ourselves classes.
I think you underestimate yourself as a dancer, because I remember you in the company as one of the leading dancers and with a marvelous, strong, lyrical character. And Hanya certainly cast you in parts which gave you that opportunity as you danced.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I did keep going on with the technique, and of course the group, when we would get together and start making dances, we always had at least an hour of technique, at least, before we'd get into the composition part of it. And also, remember, I'd also had about 3 years of ballet before that, so I did have some ballet. And then I had the Wigman's background, and then further study with Hanya at the same time I was teaching. So I was really learning all the time.
Well, you were teaching not only in the in the home school, but you were teaching around New York, too.
Oh, yes. I taught in almost every place. I taught at New York University.
Yeah.
I taught up at, let's see, I think, Columbia Teachers College. Those were the main places.
Well, you taught
places,
summers
Lincoln
at Bennington,
school.
Too.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Summers at Bennington for a number of years, and then at Mills College later on with Hanya, and before that, I taught in such places as the Gloucester Theater School in the Gloucester, Perry Mansfield Camp, let's see, Mills College. Well, that was Mills College at Bennington. Colorado Springs with Hanya.
Hanya, Colorado College.
College, yeah, University of California, and a number of other places. But
so you were really at that time combining a concert career and teaching.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Well, then something happened, and you came to teach. How did you decide to make that your main interest?
You mean how did I decide to come to Wisconsin,
no,
to leave
the company? And
well, quite frankly, I was looking ahead and wondering, you know, just where this career as a dancer was going to lead. And, of course, I always loved to teach. That was, I was split between those two things. I always liked teaching very much. And I decided, quite frankly, that maybe in a college it would be better as far as the future was concerned. And my parents had been after me. I think maybe I wouldn't have thought about it if they hadn't been after me. Please go to college and get a degree. So finally, you know, this had been going on for a number of years, sort of in the back of my head, but not consciously. I mean, it was working, these words from my parents were sort of working on my mind, you know. So finally, after about 10 years, I thought, well, I think I'd like to try it. I'd like to see what it's like. And that's how I happened to go into education. And I came here to Wisconsin because I'd heard about Wisconsin. I knew several Wisconsin people. We had a couple in the group, as a matter of fact. And talking to a woman, I don't see if I can remember her name. She taught at the University of Washington in Seattle in many years, and she taught dance, and she was from Wisconsin. They didn't have a major there, but she did teach dance. It was considered very good. I think her name was DeVries. I think that was her married name. And you remember somebody by that name?
No, I didn't know her personally.
No. And so I talked with her, and she said, the only place to go is Wisconsin. She said, I can't do anything for you here, but go to Wisconsin. So I came to Wisconsin.
Louise, you said that what you found here with Marge Dobler was similar to what Mary Wigman was teaching.
Yes,
could you mention that? What kinds of similarities there were?
Well, the whole concern with the time, the space, the energy factors, and the qualities of movement. And this is what the Wigman School was about. And it was called Zeitraum. Energy, I think, is the third one. I think I remembered that. No, Zeit, Raum, and Kraft, that was it. And those, now, as I say, they did not go into it as deeply as Marge Dobler did. But I heard those words, And they were concerned. They had, for instance, they would have classes. They'd have what they'd call a technique class there. And that was more or less, you know, technique. Their technique was not as strong as our American technique was, because a lot of it was sort of the follow the leader type of thing. But then they'd have something called a Klassenstunde, meaning a class hour. And in that class hour, they would take one of the elements, like they might take the quality of swing, and that would be discussed and experienced, and that was a class that was really theory, you see, connected with the movement.
Was it all taught by Mary Wigman?
No, Mary Wigman had, of course, helpers, because Mary was often on the road. She was often touring. She had her sister, Elizabeth Wigman, and she had Hanya Holm was there, and a person by the name of Gradle Quartz.
Well, Tina Fada, too, because...
Yes, was she there when... I was trying to think whether she was there when I was there. It could have been. She was from the Wigman School. And she had a very fine pianist there, and he taught us percussion. And we even had anatomy. Yes, we did. We had anatomy. It wasn't very much. It was not the kind of anatomy you get in the university, but at least we began to learn a little bit about the flexors and the extensors and a little bit about the bones. And they had other classes, too. Like, they'd have what they called Gruppentanz, which meant group dance. And that would be directed by the person. And a lot of it was improvisation. There was a lot of improvisation there. They'd set up a theme or a shape of some kind, and you moved within that.
So you found what you had in the Wigman School is very compatible with what you would get at Wisconsin,
yes.
Which might be different from what a lot of other professional dancers might find.
Right.
What did you do in your early years at Wisconsin? Were you a student? I understand you were also a teacher.
Yes. Well, I was a student, of course, until I graduated, but I think it was the second semester, the first year I was here, they asked me to teach the technique. And then the second year I received a TA and had a TA-ship until I graduated. The funny thing about that was, though, there were certain things I was supposed to take which I was teaching, and that was a little confusing to the registrar, because these courses would not appear on my transcript. But you're supposed to have this, this, and this. And I'd say, well, I'm sorry, but I'm teaching them. So what I had to do is I just took other courses, you know, just to get the number of credits.
What was the curriculum like when you came to Wisconsin? What kinds of courses in dance and movement were you taking? And then what were you teaching?
Let's see. Well, for one thing, because there were so few people teaching, there's actually only Miss Dobler, and then she had an assistant, and then I was there part-time, and that was about it. There could have been another TA around. I don't remember that. If so, that person was teaching in the college classes. So that the first 2 years of technique were together. Miss Dobler had them twice a week for an hour and a half. That was freshman and sophomore. Then the juniors and seniors were together. And then, well, the juniors, of course, went on that same course for 2 years. But there was a junior-senior class together. And that was an hour. And then when I started teaching, I just said it doesn't work for an hour, so I got it up to an hour and a half. So that was better. Then there was movement and its rhythmic structure was there. I'm not sure whether percussion was taught or not when I first came.
I think.
I think I did. Yeah. There was the teaching courses were there, both the adult and the children's course. There was, trying to think, I think there was one composition class. Theory and philosophy was there. What was not there were the extended technique courses and the courses for each level. That didn't come until later. Also, there wasn't as much composition, of course, with a few people. And the whole production area was practically non-existent. We did have orchestras, though. But if we gave two programs a year, that was something. Sometimes we'd give a Christmas program, and we'd do the Christmas carol. And then we'd have a program at the end of the year, and that was it.
Of course, you came at a time, too, that there was a regrouping after World War II. And there had been more production prior to that.
Well, that could be, I don't
know. But there was a change of emphasis because of disruption during war. I remember you're teaching an advanced technique class at 4 or 4:30 in the afternoon that caught anybody around. And I can remember going to those classes, and all advanced majors and some of the college students who were able to do technique at that level, and I think that was because we
yes,
until 6 or 6:30 or until exhausted.
Yeah, right. Yes, we used to let college people into the classes if they could do it.
And that became essentially the performance group.
Yes, right. Those in orchestras we all hope would take a technique class naturally. Because the orchestra's training itself wasn't sufficient. That was more of a creative group preparing for concerts.
And that was the group that did concerts.
Yes.
If they were put on, it was
that's
an orchestra
right.
group that did them.
Yes.
Was an all college.
Mm-hmm.
Although the dance majors were the main part of
that. Mainly
company.
The leaders, but occasionally we get some very good people who were not dance majors.
And from theater and
from
other departments. And that began to be the interest.
Right.
I think in the theater department.
Mm-hmm.
As you were continuing then, you probably developed some more courses. What, any particular ones, composition or more levels of technique?
Yes, more levels of technique, more composition, then the percussion course. And then as we got more people, when Anna joined us, that's when we began to have a course with staff choreographers working with students.
Now, up until the time you came to Wisconsin and sometime after it, the major was really one with an emphasis in dance education, was it not?
Yes, right.
But then this developed into other majors.
Yes, it did. Well, it's still a... Yes. We now have, and I really don't know how many years we've had it, we have a sort of a performing choreographer's major. So that these students do not practice teach. They don't do that. Many of them take the teaching course, but they don't practice teach. They just have more courses in performing, that is, under choreographers, staff choreographers, and some of our artists in residence, you know, and do their own work, do a lot more of their own work, and produce about 6-10 times as much as used to be produced, because this doing stimulates more doing, you know. And sometimes you can hardly hold the students back. If the graduates want to give their concert, and the composition classes want to give their own concert. So that has been very much stimulated. And I think it's good, because the more people do, the more you learn, and of course, the more you improve. You can't help it.
And therapy also was introduced since
You
came
right.
to Wisconsin.
Yes, that's right. It was introduced about 1949 or 48, not as a therapy major, but simply as one of those 699 courses, you know, independent project, because of Shirley Genther's interest in it, as well as the Dr. Harusa, Maya Shada, and what was her name, the psychiatrist over at the, Washburn, Dr. Washburn. These people got together, and although the Washburn did not participate in it, the three of them, Shirley Ganther, Maya Shada, and Harusa, began to conduct, just on an experimental basis, therapy sessions. And as I remember, they did it more or less first through a kind of, what's the name of that man who did, he was a theater person, and it was like interviewing and people taking parts. Minotti is the only thing I can think of, but that isn't it. That's the composer. Oh, I'm blank.
Well, maybe you'll think of it.
Well, maybe I'll think of it later. But it was quite a thing in those days. It received a lot of publicity. And they started more or less that way. In other words, it was role-taking, and you shifted roles. You'd sometimes be the interviewer and then the interviewee, and you'd shift around in order to find out how did it feel to be the person who was going to employ somebody and the person who wanted to be employed. So just shifting. I mean, that was just one of the things they did. But then they began doing all kinds of situations.
Was this all verbally or was this in movement?
First it was mostly verbal and with some movement. And then after a while they cut out the verbal part altogether. And everything was done in movement. And they did a lot of experimenting with some very interesting things for sensitizing the group to each other. For instance, one of them I remember very vividly, they used the drum, a small drum, and they would pass it to the person next to them. And the instruction was to take the drum very slowly. So they would pick the drum very slowly and pass it on to the next person. Then they were instructed to do the same thing very quickly. Well, the feedback from doing it slowly and doing it quickly showed them something. You know, the fast one was like, give it to me or I'll take it away from you or something like that. So it was a much more, it was close to an anger thing. Whereas the other one was very gentle, moving slowly made it very gentle. And so they did all kinds of experiments trying to bring out qualities through simply knowing how to, either moving slowly, moving quickly. That there was a lot of slow and quick little experiments in that.
But the major now, or the emphasis in therapy, didn't really start then. That must have stopped at some point.
Oh, it stopped.
And then
yes, it did. That only, I think, went either 2 or 3 years, purely on this one individual project basis. It wasn't even a class. I mean, it was just people getting together, experimenting. And they also, you know, went out to Mendota. They had a very good relationship with the people out at Mendota, State Hospital, under Dr. Carl Schmidt. And he would come to sessions, and they would talk the sessions over afterwards. But then that dropped, of course. People didn't have the time, and I think Shirley Ganther left at that time. So there was nobody to head it up and nurture it and keep it going. So it was sort of kind of quiet until, I don't even know how many years ago it was. Now it was really restarted by Maya Shada again. And when would that have been?
About late 60s.
Mm-hmm. About 8 years ago?
Probably
about mm-hmm. 8 years, something like
years
that.
Ago. Mm-hmm.
I have it someplace, but not with me. And then when Maya left, then Nancy Granert took over just to carry it along, and it was only again just one little course. But then finally we did succeed in getting a really schooled therapist, a person who had really studied therapy. And it's been going on ever since.
Louise, I'd like to go back to the teaching of technique and ask you what philosophy or what approach you had or have in the teaching of technique. Because I know it's quite known here at Wisconsin that mm-hmm. you are a beautiful teacher of technique, and it's quite unusual in comparison to many other people. And I'm wondering how do you teach technique? What particular points or ideas are important in your approach?
Well, that's a big question.
mm-hmm.
Well, I think very important is that you sort of know your materials and know the nature of your materials so that you can then draw it out of the students, can give them information about it. And you're trying to get at the student themselves, for them to take this material and sort of make it their own. And by constantly, I know I used to try to get at the same movement from many different points of view, the exact same movement. One time from a structural point of view, maybe another time from a spatial point of view, so that the full nature of, say, a movement or a sequence of movement would, the student's idea about that movement broaden, I hoped, by knowing and experiencing the same movement from different points of view. It's very hard to say what I did. I mean, we don't want to go into the actual technical things, that's not important. But I think one thing is I really was crazy about movement myself. I loved it. Oh, I will tell you this, because this is a something which made me aware that a student has to be aware of what he is doing to really fully comprehend what he's doing. First of all, he has to know what he's looking for, and then be able to experience it. And I had a very strange experience in New York, which really introduced me, shall I say, quite thoroughly to the kinesthetic sense. We had been working with Hanya's group over a number of years on some of the same dances, you know, and then also each year one or two new dances would come in. But when you had a new member come in, it seemed to me we were doing those same dances so many times, over and over again, and I really got very bored. And one day I said to myself, now look here, you can't do this. You cannot be bored. You've got to do something so you won't be bored. Really get into it now, get into it. And then I thought, well, yeah, but how am I going to get into it? So I thought, not concentrating enough. I don't have enough tension. So that was my first thing. I don't know what I was concentrating on, but I'm sure my brows are all like this, you know, all screwed up, and I was tensing away. When the dance was over, I was exhausted. And I said, no, that's not it. Well, then I remember I tried something else. I thought, no, there must be a better way. And then finally, that wasn't it either. So finally, I said, maybe if I watched one body part going through this. Now, I know my left foot had a little tendency to want to turn in. So I said, okay, I'll watch that part as I'm going throughout. My mind's going to be on that left foot. And sure enough, this was very satisfying. Every time, and that left foot was so big in my head, it just became enormous, you know. Then I thought, that's it, that's the idea. All right, now I have a little finger, a little pinky finger. It always wants to stick up in the air, the little finger. That finger is not supposed to be up there. And that was just tension in the wrong places, you know. It was like hanging on to something. You hung on to the pinky. So I did the same thing with that. All through that dance, I'd say that it would relax, and I'd watch it and watch it, and that finger also became very large in my mind. It was just a huge finger up there. And I began to go through the whole body this way. And I think that was very helpful when I was teaching, to know that this concentration on a part or on something was valuable.
Of course, you already knew what you were doing so well.
Oh, yes,
that
yes.
You could get
that's
outside
right,
of the form.
That's right, I could get, yes. Because the sequences were just so ingrained, you know. I didn't have to think about the sequences. Of course, you have to get those first. But I was able to, and I felt that my technique began to improve after that very much, because I used that means then from there on in. After
well,
I knew a sequence.
In the technique in those early
mm-hmm.
years that you taught, it was always a sense of complete movement experience.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't fractured. It wasn't
mm-hmm.
a drill such as bar work or some of the other kinds of
mm-hmm.
technique in which you simply do one minuscule movement over. It was a beginning and an arrival pattern.
Mm-hmm.
It maybe might have been then the technique, which was hard.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When did you start percussion? And how did that, because I figured so beautifully in the teaching of technique.
Well, that was started in the Wigman School in Germany. And then we used a lot of percussion when I was with Hanya in New York, because we couldn't afford to have a pianist all the time. So we had a whole row of drums and bells and things on a bench in front of us. And once we got a movement thing going and the students knew what they were doing, we just accompanied them. And that's how that got going. And well, we used it in our lecture demonstrations, and we liked it too. We liked having drum music, and not always music. Sometimes the students would get all involved in that music and they'd forget what they were doing.
Of course, you did it so skillfully, and it was mm-hmm. It was so easy for you to use the mm-hmm. technique. I don't think anybody else that I ever saw teach could command talking to the group and accompanying and demonstrating as needed, of course. It kept the whole thing going.
Well, you know, the Nikolai group uses a lot of percussion. I think they use it almost exclusively. Maybe not exclusively, but in their classes, they do that a lot. And Don Redlich uses it.
Of course, Don was a student of yours,
yes,
too, so
yes,
that may
right.
have had some influence on
yeah,
him.
Right.
A lot of people, too, do technique with just voice.
Yes, right.
Which you can get used to.
Yes. I find that exhausting, though.
Harder, too.
Yeah, much harder. Keep your voice going.
What about composition, the teaching of composition, which maybe you introduced, I'm not sure, when you came?
I think there was a composition class here, I'm not sure.
Yeah, there was composition.
I think there was.
Within the context, even as when I was an undergraduate.
Mm-hmm.
Which usually culminated in production.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the composition was simply done as sketches, as
mm-hmm.
short studies in class, and then there were student programs done completely as a result of composition class that were
mm-hmm.
not produced,
mm-hmm.
other than in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed you developed, though, some ways or principles of composition.
Yes. When I first started out, I was doing a lot of things with the, you might call it the movement elements. We do studies in direction, studies in levels, studies in certain spatial designs, a lot of that kind of thing. And I began to get away from those particular types of things, and I went more into such things as what I would consider a kind of a life principle. For instance, the use of retrograde is an example, which is a life principle. You go, you reach out and you come back, and you reach out and you come back. So you're going out and back and out and back. You're going forward and then going backward. And I found that as a principle was a very good one to use, because it really was a structural thing, you know, in sort of an organic structural thing. Not only just to try it out in individual movements, but to try it out as a form. To try it out as a form. Let's see. Oh dear, I have to go back and think. Well, I did a lot of things about the nature of lines to see what qualities you'd get if you did everything in straight lines or if you did everything in circles. And then they would try to figure out the difference between the qualities you did just, these were just four patterns. And they found, of course, the qualities were very different if you used all curvilinear lines or all straight lines.
You had an emphasis on the emotions, because I know the seminar on emotions was always
a very popular
course.
That I used a lot in that, and now these aren't exclusive, but I mean one of the basic things I used in that was the whole idea of motion toward, motion away, and motion against. And we know that in life that you move toward towards something that is pleasant for you. You move away from something that is unpleasant. And you move against something if you're about to bite. Yeah, not maybe literally, but I mean, there are those tendencies. And so I used to mix those up and have them say, imagine a situation, but this had to be in the body, it was not just a situational thing. What would happen if they wanted to go towards something, but they couldn't? In other words, they wanted to go toward some object, but they couldn't. What did that do? Well, then they decide, and they try these things out. It wasn't just talking, it was all, you try it out, see. Well, there was a sadness there, or a longing, or, you know, a whole line of words would come out of them after they tried some of these combinations. And when they found that if they went towards something and they wanted to go towards something, that that was a very pleasant thing. And just the opposite, if they didn't want to go towards something, wanted to go away from something, and could go away, that also was pleasant. That's where you get your relief. So I did a lot with these, just motions, which of course you immediately, it goes into the emotion, it evokes, it recalls situations of this type where, and they begin to identify and say, oh yes, I know when that and that happened to me, that was because of this conflict. So those are some of the main things that, there were other things too, but I need a blackboard to do those. You can't just talk them all out.
Well, one thing I remember about the emotions of the seminar and the classes, and I think this you did in other areas as well, is that you also link this closely with a sound study or a scientific basis, in that the students also had to look at really what did the body do physiologically, what kinds of responses did the body have.
By sound, you mean sound of hearing? Sound
physiological responses to emotional
yeah.
responses to anger, that to find out that there are some responses to anger,
oh, yes.
the tension levels change.
That's right.
And
yeah.
that was helpful as a link
mm-hmm.
to put those two together.
Right.
To study
and
that
yes,
part
and
of
what
as well
I tried to do was not to say, for instance, I do certain things and I'd put up a situation in which they had to do certain things. I wouldn't tell them what I was thinking about. And after they did them, they say, well, that feels like anger.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So I did quite a bit of that, too, putting things together, just objective things. But when they put these things together, then they came out with a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So they began to realize in movement what the nature of the emotion was in terms of movement.
Yeah.
Because the movement is what recalled it. Because I didn't say feel this or feel that.
Well, then you later used some of this movement material
mm-hmm.
as thematic approaches to composition. Some of the movements that were discovered to evoke these qualities became parts of composition.
And they could have.
Yeah.
They could have, yes. Students would sometimes take, as a final, would take some of these things and make a final dance out of it.
To what extent do you differentiate dance education for the general student and education, dance education for the professional student? Do you see them as similar, very different, or containing some of the same elements?
Well, I don't think there should be that much difference, but there probably is. I think the professional dancer doesn't tend to, because it's in a studio situation most of the time, does not tend to have as broad a background for understanding his craft as a person does in an educational situation. Now, there's a question. Does it make a difference? Is one a better dancer than the other because of background? I think often the professional dancer, if that person is really a dancer, not just a mover, finds out a great deal about his craft simply through his own experience. And of course, the help of the teachers. But I think the person in education learns maybe much faster, learns about things much more quickly. You know what I mean? Because they're helped more, because of the theory that they have, the background, the supplementary background. Part of the problem, of course, is when you're going to college, you're not spending maybe as much time as you would like to, because you also have to do other courses. But it certainly is a wonderful background, and I think those students who have gone on to New York, those who really wanted it badly, wanted to perform, have been able to do so. It takes some time, of course, because they have to catch up on technique. And if a person starts, particularly if a person starts at the college level to start to dance, you can't be a dancer, I don't care whether you're in college or whether you're a professional, in less than 10 years. It just takes time to get the body under control and the whole business.
What do you see, Louise, is to go to another area of education, but what do you see as the value of dance in education more broadly? In other words, not just for the dancer or for the dance teacher, but for the child, for the adolescent.
Well, that's where it should begin. It should begin way back. If the children would have it all the way through school, beginning in the elementary schools, all the way through high school, you'd see some fantastic dancers coming out of that. But a lot of people only start late. Now, most professional dancers, particularly those who go into ballet, start early, because they know if they want to be a dancer, they have to start early. And so they usually do start early. And, you know, even though they don't spend hours and hours and hours when they're children, but they still, some of them still study and go on into it. Now that, I don't think that's as true in modern dance. It could be in a lesser sense that some of them start later, therefore it's going to take them more time. Because you can't, no matter how hard you work, you can't push those years together. Because it just takes time for these things to really come out in the body. For instance, sometimes you'll notice a student from June, when leaves in June and comes back in September, something has happened. And what that is, we don't know, but there is something that happens. It's a growth thing, I guess a maturation type of thing.
What about dance for those that aren't interested necessarily or may never be dancers, just the public of children?
Well, I think you have to take them where they are. And if they're going to come, say, twice a week for an hour and a half, the thing is, what are your priorities? Then you're not going to sit them down and make them point their toe for half the sessions. If you want to give them a dance experience, you get them moving. Get them to move and enjoy movement. And therefore, your technique is not going to be that stressed. In other words, you're not going to train the body in a rigid way, because they can move and enjoy it very much and have technique with it. But I think it depends on the degree, the amount of.
Mm-hmm. They can be creative before they have the techniques.
Oh, yes.
That are necessary,
yes.
For other more advanced ones.
Surely.
They can come in with a certain freedom so that almost any experience is grist to the mill with children. And
right.
They bring
right.
back a great deal from other motor activities that they used to do.
Right. Yeah. If you have a person coming in to dance 5 days a week for an hour and a half or even more than that, you have a little different approach than if somebody comes in twice a week. In other words, what are your priorities?
Where do you see dance in its place in education? Where in the institution, let's say in the college, where should it be located in
if you think of a university, should it be in PE, should it be in art, should it be in music, should it be, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it really doesn't matter, provided, doesn't matter where it is. Now, we've been in PE since the beginning. If you have simpatico between the dancers and the PE people, and also if, particularly if your department happens to be movement-oriented, that's even better. I think one of the problems has been with dance in PE is a lack of identity. I think that's been a big problem, because dance was growing and growing and growing, and yet it was very difficult for the dance people, or the dance major people, to have a title. They were in PE, I guess it's because of the structure of the university, they were called PE, and the students came out with a PE degree. Well, naturally they didn't like that. I mean, that's just human nature. So I think we've made a big stride here by having the department now called Department of Physical Education and Dance. So there is that. Well, it's visible now, whereas for years and years it wasn't visible.
So really, where it can flourish and have an identity is most important rather
than
it being a particular place.
I think that's the most important.
In general. Mm-hmm.
And I think we're particularly fortunate here. Other places, I've heard a lot of people feel very resentful because, I suppose, I don't know why, but they did not have a good relationship with the people in the PE department. And we've always had a good relationship here. But I think it is because of this movement orientation, rather than a particular sports orientation. Mm-hmm. But I think the basis of compatibility is simply on this thing of we talk much the same language when it comes simply to movement factors.
Mm-hmm.
And we get stimulated because the people in PE are into that very heavily. Otherwise, you have nothing to talk about,
mm-hmm.
unless you have something like that.
The advantage of the degree being associated with physical education is the science sequence, too, which is not as available if the degree in dance is connected with theater or with music department.
Well, it depends. I think there are some who are under a fine arts program, and they will have anatomy and kines, not all of them, but and physiology, perhaps. So I think that's up to the department to, now there may be some restrictions, but I don't think they're restricted that way.
What changes, to change the subject, what changes would you say have happened, or that are particularly noticeable to you in dance since you came to Wisconsin, or since you performed, the differences in dance? How has it changed and grown from your years with Hania home
mm-hmm.
to what you have seen over the years now and to what
mm-hmm.
is happening?
Well, anything that stays alive is going to change. I mean, that's just inevitable. And I think we've seen all kinds of different developments over these last 30 years. There's even such a thing as the no dance dancer. No dance dancer. And then also, one of the big changes, I think, was going away from a lot of content and into real sort of movement. In other words, dances of movement. There always have been dances of movement, but I think the emphasis there for a while was very much into that. Or if there were a content, it would not be as easily discernible.
It wasn't a story in time.
No,
as much
no.
As exploring
no, that doesn't
quality.
Mean they don't still do it, because now you have, how many? You've got 60, 70, 80 companies. So naturally, you're going to hit just about everything. Just about everything. It just all depends on the company. And of course, mm-hmm. each company is so individual. I think it changes. One year you may have, I remember when one of the dance companies was here, the whole thing was all just movement. Mm. I don't mean it didn't have a structure or a plan, and the choreographer could have had an idea, of course, behind in his head. But you had a feeling that if there were an idea there, it was simply a motivation. It wasn't trying to depict specific things.
Louise, have you seen students changed? Have they changed over the years in any ways that are noticeable? Their motivations, their interests?
Well, I think students are much more vocal than they used to be. they can express themselves. They don't seem to have any fear of saying what they feel. And 30, 40 years ago, that wasn't so. I think they are also much more mobile these days than they used to be. I mean, by mobile, I mean they'll go to one college for a year or two and then go someplace else for something for the last 2 years.
Or they'll go someplace and study for a summer and come
yes,
back.
Yes, yes. Oh, yes. They do a lot more of that, too. I think the main thing is they're, I think they're more outspoken. I think they're maybe even more honest with themselves than they used to be. They used to hide. If they didn't like something, they'd hide it. But now they tend to come right out and let you know how they feel. Sometimes that can be very disturbing, but it's not bad at all. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. I think their interests are much wider, too, than they used to be. I think students these days are into many more different things than they used to be. I think their horizons are wider.
And they have seen more dance, too.
Oh, yes.
Both television and in performance.
Oh, yes.
So they come with a broader experience themselves.
Right. When I first came to Wisconsin, I can hardly remember of any outside group coming here to perform. As a matter of fact, I think our university dance group was well attended in those early days because there wasn't anything, hardly. Then it began to be once every 5 years, you know, something like that, and then gradually. Now we have at least, well, I'd say at least two, if not three, groups a year. And sometimes we'll have even more, because when you begin to bring in the Filipino dancers and the dancers from Taiwan, you might get as many as five or six different programs a year. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, is another widening of the horizons.
You think performance, the number of performances has increased in that this is a good thing as far as the students' experience is concerned for them?
Yes, I do.
This chance to perform?
I think so. Because a chance to perform really means, I don't mean just the performance, I mean the more elaborate study of movement. It really means you begin to know yourself and know what your body can do much earlier than if you just have one performance a year or two performances a year. Now, how many are there? 15, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
12 to 15 performances a year. And I think that's all to the good.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts about what you would have changed in your own either perspective on dance or your own individual work with dance?
Well, I think if I could have been able to, I would have studied much more dance. More. I mean, I would have tried to go and would have liked to have done a lot more with jazz and some of the other forms. But I just wasn't able to at the time. Because, as you know, in the 30s, there was very little money. Mm-hmm. We could eat and we could have a roof over our head, and that was about it. Mm-hmm. That was just about it.
Is there anything that you would change at Wisconsin or the in the dance program?
You mean now?
Well, would have changed, let's say. Anything that you would have seen as another development?
Oh, as another development?
Or
I think we should have developed faster than we did. I think it was just a case of there were only so many staff members, and we simply couldn't put in the things we wanted to simply because we didn't have the staff members. Mm-hmm. As you know, it took us years to get a therapy teacher.
Do you see dance going any particular way in the future? Any prospects for it?
Well, it's a little hard to say. I don't know exactly where it's going. It certainly has been going. Mm-hmm. I think the number of companies that are out on the road is a tremendous, is a big step forward under the help of the National Endowment. That certainly is getting dance all over the place. Now, where it's going to develop next, I don't know. I really don't. I hadn't thought about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's happening so fast, actually.
Yes, right.
Not soon enough, but it is happening fast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it seems that every change takes time for some reason or other. Every little change seems to take years to happen, even though the impetus is there, even though the desire is there. There are too many things to move to get a momentum going.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just takes time. You have to be patient, which is hard.
If you were hypothetically, let's say, starting right now for another, say, 20 years in working, say, at Wisconsin, mm-hmm. or somewhere else, well, what would you like to do with it? Where would you like to take either the program or take dance? Anything of prospects?
Well, I'll tell you where I think it's going to go. I think the next big step is really in the direction of real deep study of dance. Because we've had the really quite a mass of people getting into dance. We have a lot of dancers now everywhere. And I think for its own health, it's going to have to go into, I mean, those for those people who are suited to it, into a deeper study of it. I'm really talking about the PhD level, or something comparable to that. In other words, research, really.
We need more scholars.
We need more scholars in it, because we've got many, many dancers, maybe almost too many. I mean, I think a lot of them are struggling hard to make it. I don't think it's easy for dancers, but they're a very determined lot, I must say. And when they want to dance, they can be blind in a good way. They just go ahead. But I think the real development is going to come in the research thing. There's always going to be the dancers. There's always going to be that. And I think there's so much about human behavior and movement that could be studied and be very exciting. And where's the growth going to come? The growth, I mean, at the college level, where's the growth going to come?
Unless
it's going to come at that higher level into the research. the whole thing of feelings, you know, and how they're reflected in movement. I really think that's, and I've actually, when you look back, it's gradually, again, slowly been going that way. It's very slow, but it's going in that direction.
This would imply an audience reaction to a dancer's production.
You mean the thing I've been talking about?
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
The movement,
yeah,
meaning
I don't
would come in a performance situation.
It could. I mean, there are all kinds of ways of going at it. But I wasn't thinking of it particularly from that point of view. But if somebody could set up a study which would involve an audience, that could be one of them. That could be one type of thing. I think the field is so wide open. It's just endless. Just endless.